Joining us now, I believe he's still at Oakmont, blogger, writer, Neil Sagabell. Neil, welcome back into the golf shop.
Hey, it's good to be with you guys. How are you doing this morning?
Doing good. You still out there at Oakmont?
I am not at Oakmont, no. I'm on my couch at home. But I'm there. I mean, in my head, I'm there. It's like I've got it on the tube here.
Go ahead, Mike. Did we lose Mike? Yeah, we must have lost Mike. Mike's up in Maine right now, so we'll try and get him back on the line. But all right, so give me your thoughts as we're trying to catch up here at the U.S. Open. Kind of give me a feel for where you see scores going at this point.
I was just thinking about that. I was thinking about where would I want to be. It's hard for me to fathom, even though. We're basically still in Friday, even though it's Saturday. We're watching guys playing their second round. And we saw how well Dustin played, and we see guys in red numbers. And but, you know, everything turns after the cut, and we go into the weekend, and the scoring is going to get higher. There aren't going to be as many scores in the 60s. So I'm thinking anybody who can stay in red numbers, anybody who can stay around par, is probably going to win this thing. You know, we've seen in the past at Oakmont winning scores well over par. So it's going to be brutal on the weekend. The course is going to dry out. It's hard for me to see how these greens can get faster, but they will, and the scores are going to get higher.
All right, so you wrote in your blog about this could be one of his best chances in Phil Mickelson to win the U.S. Open Championship. It did not go well for Phil. Here's my question. You know, Phil's kind of an enigma for me. You know, he's a great player. He kind of does some things that gets himself in hot water, whether he answers questions too honestly sometimes, back to when he was talking about taxes. You know, he gets himself into hot water with gambling sometimes. He gets himself into hot water with the insider trading. Phil, at this point in his career, for me, it's going to be very hard for him to win any golf tournament, let alone a major championship, just because he is so inconsistent. He's so wild off the tee. He's inconsistent when you get him inside of 5 or 6 feet putting. I mean, realistically, how many more tournaments are we going to see somebody like a Phil Mickelson win?
That's a great point. I don't think we're going to see him win that many more. I really feel like he sort of crossed over a threshold, and this is just my gut. He has the talent and ability to put together some good rounds, but as far as putting together enough good rounds to win a major, I really question whether he can do that. And especially at the U.S. Open, I really felt like his last great chance might have been at Marion, and I thought that was where he was going to get it done. You know, finally, kind of have that fairy tale finish. You know, that Phil finally got his Open, but I just don't know that he can do it now. I really don't.
And, you know, the other thing that I wanted to ask you, too, is, you know, we've watched Andrew Landry during rain delays and basically walking out yesterday morning, knocking down one shot, one putt from 12 feet or so to lead the U.S. Open. And in his interviews, he's sitting there and talking about, you know, well, this is just any other golf tournament. You and I have watched enough golf and enough U.S. Opens to know that, you know, number one, the U.S. Open is just not any other tournament, whether it's Thursday morning or Sunday afternoon. But I guess in a sense, for Andrew Landry, it is turning into just another golf tournament because he's +4 today through 8 holes, and he has not had a whole lot of success on the PGA Tour so far this year. So maybe it is just another tournament for him, and he's going to try and hang on and not miss the cut.
Yeah, at this point, things have gone badly for him on the last couple holes, and hopefully he can steady himself because he's at even par, but he's 4 over through 8. And, you know, you get to a point where you wonder, even after an opening 66, he wants to play on the weekend. So he's had a long time to think about leading the Open, and he can say all the right things to himself, but I think the pressure, it works on you. And the course, if you're a little bit off, we know that Oakmont will kill you.
Again, we're talking with Neil Segebell, author and blogger. And Neil, you know, I got asked a question yesterday when I was interviewed on a local show here in Charlotte about the U.S. Open. Was I buying Dustin Johnson? Now, Dustin Johnson has finished at 4-under through two rounds. We've seen implosions out of Dustin in the past. As a matter of fact, this is probably like the eighth straight major where he at some point has been in the top 10 through the first two rounds. Dustin Johnson really have what it takes to be able to win a major championship, or are you concerned like I am that it doesn't seem to bother him as much as I think it should when he doesn't win one?
You can look at that a couple different ways. You know, it can bother you that you think, well, he should be a little bit more upset, but I don't know if that's just in his DNA. I think his personality is he's more of a short memory kind of guy, and he shakes it off and he goes on. I think it's hard because you see a guy that you think he's as talented as anyone out there, and he's been in position a few times now, and you realize he should have closed out at least one of those. So how many more times can he be a near miss, you know, or near winner, and you wonder if it's not going to have some serious mental scar tissue? I like the way he's coming out this week, and he's at the top of the leaderboard. If he keeps playing the way he's playing, he should have a chance at the end, and I think he can do it. I want to believe that he can. And I think he believes that he can, but you don't want to see him become sort of like a Sergio Garcia, who we know should have won two or three by now and hasn't done it.
All right. So yesterday I was thinking that, you know, when you start looking at the draw and the guys that went early, late, and the guys that went late, early, we know because of the weather it all got mixed up. But I'm almost to the point where initially I thought, you know what, you looked at the leaderboard yesterday, midday, and you're saying, okay, the top 25 is pretty much a split between guys who, you know, got to play right out of the gate on Thursday and finished on Thursday morning versus guys that had to play 36 holes yesterday. Now I'm sitting here going, you know what, as this course dries out and it gets harder and harder and they triple, you know, cut the greens this morning and rolled them and the greens are getting faster and things are starting to dry out, I'm really almost beginning to think the guys that got the 36 holes and maybe finished up first thing this morning, they may actually have the better part of the draw. Are you seeing that, or do you still think it's fairly close in terms of how things are going to play out?
I think there's a good argument for the late early guys. You know, of course, the guys who are playing well want to keep going, and it worked out really well for them, and now they can just sit and watch and get ready for the third round that's going to begin late this afternoon. You know, I can't remember. I saw some scores earlier, what the scoring average was, and I can't recall it now. One side was, I think, two strokes higher than the other. I just think it probably depends on how you're playing, but I think I would rather be the late early and just play all my golf at once. I mean, even a guy like Jason Day, who got off to a rocky start, he kept going and got a 69 out of his second round, and I was pretty impressed with that.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at it right now, I mean, you got obviously Dustin Johnson finished at 4-under. You got Scott Piercy done at 2, Garcia at 2, Daniel Summerhays with a great 65 in his second round to get to 1-under, Andy Sullivan at 1-under, Jim Furyk at 1-under. So you have six guys that are done that won't be teeing off till later on this afternoon to start their third round. You've got another five guys who are out in the course that are actually under par for the tournament. I don't know. I'm almost sitting here going, you know, Lee Westwood's the only one that's got it way under. He's at 4-under for the tournament. The other guys are all at 1. I'm sitting here going, you know what? There's six guys that are done. I think by the time the second round's over, you might only have one guy added to that, and it might be Lee Westwood. It might not be. I mean, if you told me after two rounds there's only going to be six guys under par sitting here right now, I would totally believe it. I mean, there may not be anybody that keeps it under par in this second round that's not already done.
I think you're right. I think it'd be interesting to see how the course is playing, but it's drying out. They've re-rolled the greens. There's new pins. What struck me, I counted up the number of scores in the 60s, and I think there were 17, which it blows my mind, really. That's on Oakmont, the way it plays, that's a lot of low scores. But I think you're right. I just don't think there are going to be many under par rounds. And you might see a couple guys that are maybe plus four, plus five, make a little run, might shoot a 67 or eight. But, yeah, this is a time from here on out, we're just going to see those red people in red numbers, just sort of keep falling away, because there are going to be more bogeys and double bogeys and others as we go on.
All right, Neil, here's the $10 million question. Looking at this leaderboard right now, I know we're halfway through round two. Is there somebody on this leaderboard that you go, I think that this is the guy that we need to watch as things unfold on Saturday and Sunday?
Well, I certainly think we got to keep an eye on are you talking about that sort of in the pack that's a little under the radar right now?
Yeah, we know we got Dustin Johnson in at four, but is there somebody else that you're looking at going, this is shaping up to be a golf tournament that this guy has a chance of winning?
I think you got to watch the grinders. I like Furyk. He's a Pennsylvania guy. He's come back from an injury and he's hanging right in there. He's just sort of the blue collar guy, and I think he loves playing there, sort of on his home turf, so to speak. You never know what Bubba's going to do. He's in there right now. Bubba can play great and he could just totally blow up. So, I'll tell you another guy to watch. Usvesen. This guy is incredible. He went 75-65, and he seems just so unperturbed, whether he's playing in the U.S. Open or, some minor event. The guy's got a lot of game. So it's going to be interesting to watch.
All right, Neil, you've got a couple of great books. If people have not had the opportunity to read these, The Draw in the Dunes and The Longest Shot, give everybody a feel for what these books are about.
Well, both of them really are about some great moments in golf history. The Longest Shot, which was the first book I wrote about, was about the 1955 U.S. Open, which was it was the first one played at the Olympic Club, where the unheralded Jack Fleck pulled off one of the greatest upsets by knocking off Ben Hogan. And he went toe-to-toe with him in an 18-hole playoff. And then Draw in the Dunes is about the 1969 Ryder Cup. And it has a famous ending with Jack Nicklaus conceding a putt to Tony Jacklin in the last match. And it all ended in a tie, the first time in the history of the Ryder Cup. A lot of dramatic things happened leading up to that. So a couple fun books for me to research and write.
Well, Neil, man, we appreciate you hopping on with us. Have fun watching the rest, and we'll see where this ends up on Sunday afternoon. And you never know, it could spill into Monday with a playoff.
That's true. It could be. Thanks so much. Great talking to you.
All right. Thanks a lot.